back to Covered and Bound. Coming up next, we've got Ray Dionandan, who is an author and will be at the Desh Pradesh Festival on Wednesday evening to talk about his work. And Ray joins us now on the telephone. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Pretty good, Armand. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks.
Now, you've got a gig at Desh Pradesh on Wednesday, right?
Yeah, pretty big.
Do you want to talk a bit about the festival and what you're going to be doing there?
Sure, sure. I don't know a whole lot about Desh. I've only been there once before, and then I was a journalist covering it.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that it was founded about 10 years ago by KUSH, which is an organization of gay South Asian men. But it's evolved to be more than just a venue for marginalized communities. It's mostly a South Asian venue these days. In fact, that's why I'm there. I'm presenting as part of a diasporic writing event, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the presenters in my evening will be artists portraying the attitudes of about diasporic experiences, mm-hmm. racism, things like that.
I think the evening is entitled Dislocation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, have you? I was going to ask if you had been there to the festival before. Is this, this is your first year?
First year as a presenter and mm-hmm. as just an attendee. I went once about 3 years ago as a journalist covering it for a magazine in California.
Mm-hmm.
It's since gotten smaller but more intense.
Yeah, I was at it for the first time last year, and I was very impressed. It's a very rich programming.
Mm.
Now, are you going to be reading from your collection
That's
of
right,
stories,
yes.
Sweet Like Saltwater?
That's correct.
Right. And that collection talks about the whole diasporic experience. Do you want to talk
That's
about
right.
the theme
sure.
there?
That's right. Sure. It's ostensibly about the Indo-Caribbean diaspora, which is, of course, a term describing the influx of Indians from South Asia to the Caribbean region, to countries like Guyana, Trinidad, and Jamaica. And my book is a collection of short stories collected over the past, 10 years. Boy, I'm not that old, I guess. So. And the binding thread that links them all is an idea of water.
Mm-hmm.
My ancestors came from India, and we're close to the Indian Ocean, or if not the Arabian Sea, then we move close to the Caribbean Ocean, and the link there is actually one of blood. Blood is a kind of salt water, you know, and we have certain ties to the ancient homeland that we haven't quite forgotten. The history of Indo-Caribbeans is such that we're brought to the Caribbean as indentured servants about 200 years ago, and a lot of my ancestors didn't want to remain there. They're there not by choice. And so every generation is taught that you're not really Guyanese, you're not really Trinidadian, you're not really Jamaican, you're actually Indian, and one day you're going back, so don't get too
mm-hmm.
comfortable.
Right.
Yeah, so,
and does that come from the parents or from the society that they're in?
It comes from the parents.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm generalizing. There are exceptions,
yeah.
of course. I'm speaking mostly from a rural standpoint. In the cities, it's a bit different. The nature of the local community is more imposed upon you. And I, of course, was raised entirely in Canada, so my experiences are secondhand on top of that. But the odd thing we find with diaspora communities is that you have this conceptual link to the motherland, and so you tend to learn more about the general history and the ancientness and so forth, but you have gaps in knowledge about the details. And
mm-hmm.
that comes out in the art a lot. I think one of the signatures of diasporic writing in particular is knowledge about the area, about the traditions and so forth, but you get the little things wrong. The pronunciation of words and
right.
things like that.
And often people are criticized for getting those things wrong by the purists, I suppose.
Exactly. And I make no apology for it. For example,
yeah.
Wednesday night when I read, I'm going to intentionally mispronounce something just to make a point that I'm not Indian. I'm not even Guyanese. I'm Canadian now, and I have histories in several countries. And so as a result, the terminology has evolved. The pronunciations have evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And one should not be apologetic about that. I have a friend, for example, whose name is Indira. She's from Guyana. She's Indian.
Right.
And her South Asian Indian friends criticize her all the time for not pronouncing it India,
yeah.
which is how it's pronounced in Asia.
Yeah.
But,
it's her name.
It's her name, exactly.
She can say whatever she wants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Indo-Caribbean diaspora is, you could say it's once removed from the subcontinent, because it's not like the sort of South Asian diaspora that came to Canada directly.
That's right.
Does this present a greater degree of complexity in terms of the identity?
In one sense. In another sense, it actually makes things a bit simpler.
Okay.
I'll talk about the simplicity first. It's by coming to the Caribbean first, we lost a lot of the very specific Indian traditions, like the caste system, like polytheism. Right. So those things were weaned out before we came to North America. So it was easier to adopt things like the Judeo-Christian ethic, and it's easier to accept that democratic society, things like that. In fact, there's some studies looking at the progress of Indian societies using the Caribbean model as a control, looking at specifically the effect of caste, since Caribbean Indians tend not to recognize caste. There are exceptions, of course. We found that they tend to excel when given the opportunity. They don't perceive the barriers that are perceived socially in India. The complexity comes into it when we arrive in North America. There isn't an infrastructure for understanding our history. Right? So because of the history of the English and their presence in India, we in Canada have an understanding of what it means to be Indian from India, from 1930s movies and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, but we don't have an understanding of what it means to be Caribbean and Indian. So we do lack a certain historical link. That's where it becomes difficult.
And do you see your writing and literature from the Caribbean diaspora as a way to start mapping that and getting it down on paper?
I never thought of it quite those terms. I suppose it could be looked that way. I just looked at it as a kind of therapy.
For yourself?
Sure, yeah. You grew up not knowing quite what you are. Are you Canadian? Are you Guyanese? Are you Indian? And these experiences are not just limited to my particular race. I know a lot of Filipinos, for example, have found some meaning in my writing because it speaks of this identity in general. And I think anyone who's traveled a great deal eventually learns that your home is where you live most of the time. Certainly when I went to Asia the first time, I was about 25 or so, I was struggling with those questions. Am I Indian? Am I Guyanese? Am I Canadian? And you discover very quickly, I'm Canadian. I crave the food of Canada. I crave the flush toilets. I crave the political system and hockey games and so forth when push comes to shove.
Right. Have you been to Guyana?
I went back when I was 13. I was born there, of course.
Okay. Because I'm wondering, I mean, you write about the imprint of the history into the children's blood, and you say Indian children of the Caribbean, as distant as our birth from that realm may seem, the taste of our blood's history is as sweet as the salt water of that warm sea. And I'm wondering if the children of the Caribbean or the diaspora, if you think that they do look, you know, feel that imprint and look back, because some people say that we're losing the children and they're losing their culture.
I see. I can only speak of my own experiences and those close to me, but we're certainly bred with a desire to retain the ancientness. In the case of Guyana and several of the Caribbean nations, there is a sense of otherness because you're not from the region, you know you're not from the region, and there's always this competition with the other ethnicities, you know, the African Caribbeans and the European Caribbeans and so forth, and each group clings to its heritage quite strongly. And so every day of your life you're reminded of the otherness, and the otherness compels you to seek a history. Those who are lucky enough to have access to resources to do their own personal research, I think, find some meaning in that. And it's unfortunate that more don't have that opportunity.
Can you tell us a bit about some of your stories? One of them that struck me was about the cricket fan.
Well, a lot of them are actually stories that were told to me from real-life experiences of some relatives, particularly my parents, and I've melded them with my own vociferations and theories. Sometimes I've thrown in some Asian myths. In general, what I'm going for is a mood. I think most fine literature begins with an emotional mood of some kind. And I think the mood of the Caribbean, at least the fantastical mood that I cling to, not having any true memories beyond 13 years old, are moods of subtle seduction and melodic timbres of ocean waves and so forth, of heat, of the feeling of sweat trickling down your face that feels like ants, that terror of poverty, and yet that sense that things taste a lot more strikingly, things are more vivid and to the eye and to the ear. I think those are memories that most tropical people retain. There's something about coming from a land of minimal media but maximal sensory input that really burns itself into your brain quite vividly.
And you try to reproduce that in your writing?
Yes, I do. Plot's important, I think character is important, but to me it's all laid upon mood.
Now, when did you start to look to the Caribbean for a source of your writing? Or did it all just come from your a look at yourself and your identity?
Yeah, and when I first started writing, when I was about 14 or so, my hero was Isaac Asimov, you know, mm-hmm. a crappy writer, but who really evokes a certain response in 14-year-olds. And I realized I wrote mysteries, for example, about debutantes on cruise lines around the Hamptons and things like that. And I realized I knew nothing about debutantes or cruise lines or mm-hmm. vacation spots. What do I really know about? And what I know about is family history. I know about my memories as a child. I know about things that I've read and studied. And when you make that leap from writing about things that you dream about to writing about things that you know and experience and feel, you've entered a realm of fear.
Mm.
The closer you get to reality and to yourself, the more terrifying it becomes. I think that's when it becomes literature, when it becomes terrifying to write about.
Mm.
And that's when it also becomes therapeutic.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought, I never thought of it that way, because I thought if you're writing about something you know, then you're more comfortable and you're more honest. But I guess there is that sort of facing yourself.
There's comfort in a technical standpoint. The words flow more easily, but there's discomfort in exposing it.
Yeah. Did you, your stories are also based, you said, on family histories. And I've always wondered about people who write family stories. Is there a sense of betrayal sometimes if you portray someone in a less than perfect light? Did you have to deal with that?
Kind of. To be honest, I've really fictionalized so much of it that the family elements really are heavily diluted.
Mm-hmm.
And only a couple of elements here or there, and those who are portrayed know who they are and they have no problem with it. It's more... for example, my father told me a story once when he was walking down the canal in Guyana, and he saw a man drowning a dog. And I just incorporated that little tale into a larger story.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I use the real-life family history as a way of spicing up the realism of the grander tale, but the grander tale is always fictionalized in my writing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I did wrestle with the betrayal aspects, not so much because I thought I'd misrepresent some people, but because I don't want to take someone else's story away from them.
Mm-hmm.
What I find, though, is that people are even more eager to tell me their stories, but now they come with recommendations for how it will be written.
conditions.
Right.
Well, thanks for sharing with us, and I look forward to the reading and to the whole DASH program.
Oh, you'll be attending?
I hope so.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck with it, and we look forward to future works. Are there any future things in the work that we should know about?
I have a manuscript done on South Asian folktales. I've rewritten them for a Western audience.
Okay.
And I'm still looking for a publisher for it, but this should be out hopefully within a year. And I have a novel that's half written.
Well, all those publishers who are listening, I'm sure certain will call us and get your contact info. Okay. Thanks a lot, Ray.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.